Alrighty, welcome back to the Future of NFT Podcast, the most efficient and realist podcast in the NFT world. I'm your host, Jared. Today, this episode right here, man, this guy again, Paul Gerben, sick-ass guy, right? Like, real artist, again, celebrities collecting his artwork, right? And he's building on top of a new technology, right? The Pastel Network, right? You're going to hear more about it in this episode. All I'm going to say is this episode was super fun to record. Again, these guys, I could have picked their brain all day. Like, that's just, I don't know, I love it, right? They've got so much experience. So this episode is a treat for sure. Let's get right into it.
So today we have two very special guests. We have Anthony Georgiadis and Paul Gerben joining us today. Paul and Anthony, can you go ahead and give us a quick introduction? Just tell us who you are.
Sure. I'm an artist, sculptor, designer, photographer.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm one of the co-founders of Pastel Network, a application-specific layer one blockchain in the Web3 and NFT space.
Awesome. Alrighty, Paul, we're going to go ahead and start with you. So I really want to dig into you again. It's just, we go to GerbenFineArt.com, right? And we see all these crazy, you know, celebrities, right? Just all these different artworks. So can you just really tell me, like, how did that even start? Like, I read that you started, like, you were an artist since you were like 7 years old. Like, can you tell me about that?
I have a very creative mother. She was an interior designer. She passed about 15 years ago, but she was into everything creative and kind of just pushed me to, you know, be creative with magic markers and paint supplies and getting me into fine art classes at a young age, from like painting nude models when I was a kid, which I actually thought was pretty hysterical as a child. But, you know, looking back, I'm glad I had that foundational training.
Interesting. So when you were maybe like 18, 19, 20, like getting out of college or, you know, about to leave high school, like, what did you think that you were going to do? Were you like, yes, I'm going to be an artist? No ifs, ands, or buts? Or like, what was your thought process there?
Well, I went to college for art for a freshman year, but I really didn't have the funds to pay for school. So after my freshman year, I actually dropped out of school, but I stayed in the local area where I was attending college and bused tables and worked at restaurants, but I kept taking my money and taking courses in everything I was interested at my school and other local schools in the area.
That's awesome. So you knew like this was like your thing, right? So like, was there any specific moment that happened to you, maybe an email from someone or just a text that made you think like, oh yes, like I could do this full time and like, this is what I'm going to do.
Actually, I wound up becoming a self-taught graphic designer and photographer, which is what I did for about 25 years. I never actually thought you could make a living as a fine artist until you were much older or dead. And the fine art career took off about 15 years ago, just after doing it again for about 8 or 9 years for fun. It just started to blossom. And then I kind of pivoted and stopped doing graphic design, branding, and photography and focused all my energy in the fine art area.
Interesting. So I really want to, because like, again, you've made different just sculptures, right? Just art pieces for a bunch of different celebrities, right? So what was working with the first celebrity like for you? Like, was that kind of like an oh shit moment? Like, you know, like it's here. Like, what did you think about that?
Yeah, it was exciting. I had put my art in a gallery on West Broadway in Soho in New York. And I think it was only in there for a few weeks and started selling right away. And then Carmelo Anthony's wife came in and liked my work, contacted me directly to do a custom piece for Carmelo for Christmas. And when she saw my other work, she bought another piece for Swiss Beats and Alicia Keys for Christmas also. So that was kind of the aha, first two celebrity collectors. And Rick Ross had bought one of my Mike Tyson portraits about a year earlier from a gallery. But once that happened, it started to snowball, you know, to another celebrity. Chris Rock came in and bought a piece from the gallery. Cece Sabathia's wife had me do a custom piece. I did a piece for Jimmy Fallon and so on and so on. And as you just kept building more and more celebrity collectors, it just kind of kept growing, manifesting.
That's so insane. So I saw that artwork with Slash. And like, to me, that was like so sick. Like, I'm a big fan of Slash. Just used to rip a sweet child of mine on my guitar when I first learned. When I saw that, I was just like, dude, that is so sick. I want to know like a little bit more about your like creative process. Like, how do you even start there?
Everything I do is experimental. I really don't have any specific idea in mind. I just experiment with everything I'm doing. And for me, that's the joy of the creative side of it. Just experimenting, throwing enough shit against the wall till something sticks. And, you know, sometimes I'll do 80 or 100 ideas of something and I don't like any of them and I never release them. And then sometimes I do two or three ideas and they come out amazing and I'm super happy with them. I think it's just, you know, through discovery and experimentation that you wind up landing on something that really appeals to me and says something to my eye, you know.
Interesting. So again, so people know you for awesome, obviously, like your sculptures, right, your paintings. So when Paul says to his family, his colleagues, right, to his friends, he says, hey, I'm going digital, I want to try digital, are they like, Paul, what do you talk, why? Or do they just say, no, we trust Paul, we know he's gonna do something great?
I think it's the opposite. I actually started doing, I mean, I started traditionally as an artist as a child, but the last 25 years I've been a kind of a digital artist and as a graphic designer and, you know, doing photography, which went digital. And I started doing my modern fine art digitally, actually. So I was actually, you know, using the tools that no one else was really using to make art before anyone else was doing it. So when the whole NFT market started, I was getting calls from literally collectors and clients and friends from Hong Kong to Australia to Japan telling me that I have to, you know, get in and learn this market and understand what's going on with this whole NFT craze. So I literally spent over a year and probably 20,000 hours learning every single thing I could about the space, about, you know, the way it works and the transparency of it. And I think it was a really natural progression. And also I was an art director and ad agency. So I've worked with a lot of digital formats from animation to storyboard. So I have a pretty deep understanding of the digital art world.
Interesting. So in maybe both of y'all's opinion, maybe Anthony, you can hop in. So like what has changed from like, I guess like late 2021, where it was like this whole bull rush, right? All the money was in, right? The Bored Apes going insane. Just what's the difference? Wow.
We are all over the place right now.
I'm using HubSpot with their CRM platform.
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Okay. I don't know what that was. It's all good. So anyway, so Anthony or Paul, so like, again, going from 2021, late 2021, like what feels different at this time versus in late 2021 when it was like a complete just bull run? Obviously, it's a little bit bear market, but like what feels like, what do you think the like a consumer feels different about in the NFT space?
Yeah, I mean, look, right, you right now, obviously, if you're talking about 2021, just from a macro perspective, you're talking about the height of any sort of asset class, tech equities, crypto, obviously NFTs being, you know, right end most speculative assets in the space. I think a lot of people were jumping into, you know, both this idea that, you know, capital was easy to come by, there was a lot of cash in the market, cash going around, but also NFTs being so nascent and new. So there was a lot of FOMO really in the market, just in general. People don't want to miss out on the next hot collection of 10,000. You know, you don't want to miss out on the next potential airdrop of mutants or whatever it might be. And so there was definitely that just kind of craze of irrational exuberance that you really get with a lot of markets as they're starting to take off. And I think for the most part, it really got ahead of itself a little bit. You had a bunch of shit projects coming out, a new collection of 10,000 that's going to promise XYZ. New mint, a new airdrop, you know, mint wars, whatever it might be. And it was certainly a really fun, exciting time in the market, but certainly not sustainable whatsoever. And I do think that, interestingly enough, that point in the market took away from really what NFTs are fundamentally overall. You had so much focus on this idea of ownership as a specific NFT, as membership to a community or access to a exclusive club or whatever it might be. You haven't really even seen the core use case of pure digital art emerge as an NFT standard. You know, Paul's one of the earliest true artists in the space. And he's obviously really starting to take off in the space overall from an NFT perspective, but it's still super, super early, just in the broader grand scheme of things in terms of the long-term use cases and longevity that we'll see NFTs emerge at over time.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to partner with Pastel, because there's a ton of fraud and scams and all these money grabs in the NFT space, and I think it's taken away from the uniqueness and the opportunity and the excitement of the new existing technologies. You know what I mean? And I was waiting for someone who, you know, understood the security part of it. And, you know, I wanted to do it with the right partner and not just make money, you know, but I wanted to give them away, you know, by offering some kind of really unique utility. And that's why Pastel has just been, you know, assessed all the points of friction in the space, you know what I mean, by actually doing something about it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So I guess this is a perfect next question. So I guess a new artist, right, that is not too familiar with the NFT space, right, they think it's just a scam or whatever. So, like, what do you say to, like, new artists coming into the NFT space and asking about, like, scammers that duplicate their work? Like, what do you say to them?
I always tell them literally, like, that they should, first of all, always use Pastel because it's the only super secure protocols of projects in the NFT space, you know, from being duplicated or stolen or lost or manipulated, you know. But with their, they have a new smart mint thing that they also added tool, you know, that's making minting NFT easier and more intuitive. You know, that's another problem was the minting process. You know, so I just wanted to make sure I collaborated with their team because I trust them to keep the NFT safe. You know, ultimately, you know, trying to protect the collectors of mine who own them, you know, and I also wanted to instill trust in my collectors, you know, to, you know, who have never heard of an NFT before and really didn't know how to trust the tech.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I did something on OpenSea, and literally in 24 hours, they duplicated my account and my artwork. And I immediately stopped, you know, minting through them and started doing stuff with Pastel.
Interesting. So just for someone that doesn't even has no clue, what is Pastel? Like, what is the Pastel network? It's not an NFT marketplace. Like, what is it?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, right? It's a super, the simplest way I described it to some of our investors and different people in the community is it's a lot of the glue that holds and will hold kind of the Web3 and NFT ecosystem together. So at the core, Pastel's a completely decentralized layer one blockchain that's basically running various application specific functionality, or, you know, what do I mean by that, right? So take Paul's example. Paul goes mints an NFT on OpenSea. The data gets sent to Pastel, the piece of digital art or whatever it is. Pastel takes that image and we run it through a super sophisticated deep learning technology that actually assesses how similar or dissimilar Paul's digital art is with all other NFTs that exist on that marketplace, that exist on Ethereum, that exist in the Web3 ecosystem, and then it assigns it a relative rareness score. 99.9%. You know, this is a very, very, very unique piece. It's certainly, you know, Paul Gervin's, or, you know, 0%. This is a duplicate of this other image and you should stay away from it, etc.
Right.
So you think about the use cases of that piece of technology. It could be, you could be on Autograph, right? And Tom Brady could have a collection of different clips or highlight reels of tremendous plays or whatever he's had in the past. If someone turns around and creates those same exact images or NFTs or whatever it is on a different marketplace, Autograph can pick that up and say, hey, look, there's duplicates over here. We're either going to issue a takedown request. We're going to assess those as, you know, fraud. We'll ban them on the Autograph platform. Those aren't originals. Those aren't unique. And then even from just a collector standpoint, if you go buy one of Paul's NFTs, you'll see in the metadata itself, hey, this NFT itself is certified by rare at this block when it was minted. This was the rareness score, and anything that comes after that will have a lower rareness score than this Paul original. So in the most simple terms, this specific tool can be used by NFT marketplaces, by other blockchains, by third-party applications to basically prevent duplicates, prevent copyments, prevent scams, to help enforce some of the copyright and IP protection that comes in the use case of emerging creators and established creators. And then beyond that, we actually also secure and store that data permanently on our blockchain. And that's probably one of the biggest and most important pieces as well. When you go buy an NFT on Ethereum, you have to actually understand where that data is being stored, because all that lives on the token itself is a hyperlink to somewhere off chain where that data is supposed to live forever.
Exactly.
That data could live on Paul's computer. It could live on an Amazon Web Services, you know, storage bucket, whatever it might be. The problem is now all of a sudden, you know, why are we even in a decentralized or Web3 environment if we're relying upon a lot of these centralized third-party services? Paul decides he wants to stop paying for his hosting fee on Amazon. The data goes down with it, and that hyperlink points to nowhere. So Pastel solved that problem with a true decentralized on-chain storage layer that really supports a lot of this permanent storage. So if you look at some of our partners now, Polkadot, Avalanche, you know, Polygon, Ripple's on XRP, right? These are massive ecosystems where whether you're the actual blockchain itself or whether you're the actual NFT marketplace or the creator that's minting on there, you can make use of these intrinsic services, and it all happens on the back end.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I always ask this question because I just love different perspectives. What is your take on someone saying that a digital asset is more valuable on the Ethereum blockchain versus the Solana blockchain? Like, what is your take on that?
Mine or his?
Either or, if y'all have different perspectives, like whatever y'all think about that.
Anthony, you can answer first then.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, right? Because, you know, what the value of, let's say, a rare digital asset is really kind of beholden to the underlying appraiser or the collector, whatever it might be. I might look at a piece of Paul Gribben art and say, wow, I think that piece is worth X million dollars. And a creator will come down or a collector will come down tomorrow and say, actually, I personally think it's worth 10 times as much. So there's a lot of relative, quote unquote, assessment in terms of how you actually think about the intrinsic value of something itself. Now, in the case of Ethereum versus blockchain versus Solana, you're talking about two different blockchain networks that you might say, well, Ethereum has, call it 10 times more applications built on top and 100 times more daily transaction volume. So there's higher access to liquidity or network effects or whatever it might be. But the truth is, at the end of the day, the Web3 ecosystem itself over time is going to be a multi-chain world, where you have multiple blockchains interacting with each other, and you could have an NFT on Solana, and there'll be a way to bridge that to Ethereum, and there'll be a way to bridge that to Polkadot. And all that data is stored on Pastel and secured on Pastel, and it's all talking in real time. Obviously, you can't double spend or double trade those. But the bigger thing to understand here too is that over time, the Web3 ecosystem will be highly intertwined and highly interoperable. And a lot of those quote unquote questions that we might have now in terms of where value lies will sort of dissipate, because a piece of digital asset within the Web3 ecosystem is a true rare digital asset, no matter what actual blockchain that it was initially minted on or cultivated on.
Yeah, I my opinion of it is as simple as, you know, the art's worth the same amount of money when you buy it and you collect it. But when you're going to sell it, you know, it might move much faster because you have 100 times more activity in the Ethereum blockchain. So, you know, it's almost like putting something on eBay, which has, you know, whatever, 100 million active users every day versus some local, you know, auction house that has 20,000 users a day. You know what I mean? So yeah, it doesn't mean that 20,000 user doesn't have some specific big collectors on it. But, you know, overall in the math world, you know, you're obviously of a better chance of flipping the work on something that's being used. But just what Anthony said, they're all gonna work interactively as soon as everything. I think we're still very early in the space, you know.
Interesting. So Paul, this question just popped in my head. I probably should have asked it earlier.
Sure.
But so you're obviously, again, really into art. Like you know, this is like your thing. You're like an OG artist, right? So like, do you have any OG friends that are like not with it?
Well, I don't think it's I don't think it's so much about being with it or not. It's just a lot of, I think the reason we're so early in the space is because the tech is so complicated, you know, the onboarding process, the getting a wallet process, yeah. You know, Pastel definitely makes it easier than most, you know, people to help them kind of guide them through that. But unless you personally know someone that can guide you through, it's a complex thing. I think once it gets to a point where it's a 1-2 click thing, like imagine if Apple had Apple/NFT and you just went on and you want to buy an NFT and you just double click on it. And it's like, yeah, you know what I mean? I think when it gets to that point, which it definitely will, just like everything else, eventually when it gets that, I think we're going to see the NFT market go 100x. I think we're in such an early period of it now. It's almost like when the internet just started, and you know, there was, you know, it was like Web 1 where you could read stuff and you couldn't even buy stuff or even download stuff. I think we're in a very early stage of it, but it's moving very quickly too. You know?
That's interesting. So I'm 23 years old. I wasn't here for like Web 1, right? Mm-hmm. So is it correct to say that this Web 3 does feel like as big or bigger of a change than Web 1 or Web 2?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just going to keep progressing like anything else. But, you know, technology is so advanced so fast these days that, you know, things are flipping in a, you know, instead of stuff that normally took like, you know, 3 years or 2 years is now taking 3 months or 2 months or, you know, 3 weeks or 2 weeks. It's like where everything's hyper speed and you know, everything's moving at a much faster pace.
Interesting. Yeah. So now I'm curious, like, what is, again, both of y'all, I want to hear both just because I just like to see people's opinions on everything. So like, just what do you think broadly about the metaverse? Like, is this going to be a thing? Like, what do you think about that?
Oh, go ahead, Paul.
No, sorry, I didn't understand. Were you asking me or Anthony a question?
I just want both perspectives on the metaverse. Like, what is y'all's take on the metaverse? Like, is this going to be a thing? Like, what do y'all think?
I mean, the metaverse already is, you know, a thing, right? And I guess that's kind of how you define it. You know, you could be basically sitting on social media and someone's quote unquote image or metaverse sort of profile matters more than, you know, how they look or how they think or what their what reality is in terms of like in real life, right? So I think we've already started to segue into a world of augmented reality and metaverse to that respect. Now there's a huge difference between metaverse in Web3 and metaverse in enterprise-based applications. You know, you could be basically Estee Lauder and you're developing metaverse-based products to help women better assess what's the best cosmetic for me, you know, what's the best way to, you know, make me look and how can I kind of tailor that or sample that in a metaverse application. You know, you have construction companies that are already taking on metaverse apps where, hey, instead of having 20 different subcontractors fly across the country to go do some sort of site survey or estimating, they can all put a headset on, they can use some sort of geospatial mapping technology, and they can assess everything in real time, literally at home, and get it done in a tenth of the time, at a tenth of the cost, spending less money, spending less wasteful resources on things. So these are all sorts of like metaverse applications. Metaverse in terms of Web3, you know, 100% it's going to be a thing. And obviously it gets thrown around and there's a lot of misconnotations about what is and what isn't the metaverse. Yeah. But we're seeing tremendous use cases from gaming to hospitality, to travel and entertainment. Obviously NFTs being a massive use case and pillar in terms of a lot of the tokenization, whether it's wearables, whether it's a profile picture or a in-game upgrade or whatever it might be. NFTs really powering a lot of the quote-unquote metaverse use cases and applications as it pertains to Web3.
Right, and real estate's about to take a deep dive where you're going to be able to literally walk through a house without having to be in it. That's like kind of the next, one of the next big phenomena that I know like Zillow and some of the big companies are working on where put on a pair of Oculus glasses and you're actually, you're in the house. You don't have to go drive and see it. You know what I mean? Just from 3D photos, you can actually walk around the house, walk in the backyard and see if it's a house you want to buy and then maybe buy it in crypto, you know?
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. So, okay. So now can we talk about Smart Mint? I'm curious about this. Like, so not everyone is obviously knows how to code, right? So like, can you just talk a little bit about Smart Mint?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'll give you a quick rundown and would love to obviously hear Paul's take in terms of just, you know, his use case of minting with Smart Mint and from his standpoint as a creator. But the biggest thing with Smart Mint is, and I talked you through obviously the pain points that, you know, Pastel solves with regards to storage and duplicate detection and fraud and security, et cetera. But there's other issues in the market with respect to how the heck does a creator on day one go and take a piece of digital art and mint it as an NFT and then go list it for sale on OpenSea and then make sure that royalties are enforced and all that stuff. There's 20 different steps in the process and it's just super complicated, super time consuming. And I'm sure as hell, we've probably lost thousands of, you know, even millions of aspiring or existing digital artists who have just churned out of the market because it's so hard to just tap into. So Smart Mint was really created to be a no-code application where any artist, any creator could, as simple as a few clicks of a button, upload a asset, you know, a video, a song, a piece of digital art, whatever it is, click a couple buttons, decide what network they want it to be minted on, literally as easy as checking a box. I want this on Ethereum, or I want this on Solana, or I want this on Pastel. Have all that data secured on Pastel, click a button, have it completely deployed, minted in their wallet, literally in seconds. Without a single line of code, without a single configuration, they can add all sorts of custom properties, attributes, traits. They basically put a line that says, this is my perpetual royalty address, this is my percent royalty, this is my secondary, you know, this is how I'm going to split the royalties, etc. And then click a button and NFT is minted, and they can click another button and list it for sale on OpenSea. And it happens within basically, as I mentioned, you know, a few seconds or minutes, depending on what network. We don't have to deal with all those sort of onboarding and on-ramping tools that are required on a variety of other networks or marketplaces or whatnot.
Interesting. So just real quick. So if I want to go in there and just say, okay, I want the royalty to be 2% or 4.5%, that's something with the click of a button, I can go in there and just choose.
Yep.
Yeah, the biggest thing is when you click that button and you kind of deploy it, on the back end, what's happening is we're doing all that fancy stuff. We're writing the smart contract. We're deploying it to Ethereum or Solana or Pastel or wherever it is. And that NFT is yours. And that code is existing. You know, it's owned by you. It lives in your wallet. It's your smart contract. It's your NFT. You can do whatever you want with it. You could list it for sale. You could create an edition of 10,000. You could airdrop them to fans. You know, you can do whatever you want. And so what we're excited about is adding a bunch of these additional tools and functions and really almost paving it into a broader cross-chain marketplace. You know, I talked about the future of Web3 being this interoperable peg of different blockchains and networks and ecosystems. A huge part of, you know, where SmartMint's going to be is helping bridge those assets over time and making it super easy for users with some nice Apple-looking application to cross over to whatever network they want without having to deal with all that bullshit on the back end.
Makes perfect sense. Go ahead, Paul. I don't know if you want to speak to like your, just how it was like your experience using this.
Well, I mean, it was great because every other thing I experienced using, I either did wrong or made some mistakes. And like, I'm just glad that Pastel was, you know, intuitive enough to understand that that's everything that's kind of needed that's missing, because all these platforms started from Super Rare to OpenSea to Rarible, and they're all missing different elements. They either didn't have image duplication, they didn't have, you know, fraud stuff. I mean, when I had fraud problems on OpenSea and you wrote to their, you know, wrote to their text, their support, you wouldn't hear back for 5-6 days. And this is like during a launch. Like I was having anxiety and heart attacks dealing with their tech and their lack of security and their lack of really like they're just making tons of money. They don't even have enough staff to handle basic fraud, you know, which is not good. You know, Pastel was just smart to be the one company that saw what was missing and started developing all this, you know, intelligent software to make the space a safer space and an easier space to work in and a better space to mint and, you know that your work is secure.
That's awesome. So maybe a specific question for Paul and then one for Anthony. So Paul, is there something here in the near future that maybe a project that you're working on that you're just really excited about?
Yeah, I have a bunch of big projects. I'm doing something actually with Clint Eastwood's son Scott with Pastel. I'm working on Bobby Orr. I'm finishing Bobby Orr's whole NFT drop. I'm working on Steve Wozniak's NFT drop, you know, super high-end pieces. And everything I do is going to go through Pastel, so I don't have to worry about, again, duplication, fraud, you know, and also the minting process. So it just makes everything much more efficient, easy, and safe.
Awesome. And real quick before I ask you, Anthony, so Paul, this question has popped in. So when we're talking about like physical artwork and then also the digital, so like what do you think about, again, having you buy obviously the NFT and then you get the physical, like how does that work?
I've done both. I did a piece, the first NFT I did, you know, went for 250,000 and it came with a physical painting. And I've done pieces on Super Rare that went for 100 grand that are just digital assets. And I'm developing some NFT drops that are going to come with sculptural pieces, utility, like experience, like, you know, a full night with Bobby Orr with 8 people going to a game with Bobby Orr, or, you know, what's it called? The win at Bobby Orr, 8-foot, you know, copper sculpture that's worth $500,000, to small sculptures, to, you know, small little digital screens. You know, like if you buy one of the Bobby Orr hockey cards, it's going to come with a, you know, a digital kind of monitor that you get at home, small one that you can display your, you know, your NFT on as well.
Interesting. So, okay. So Paul, I got to run through this real quick so I can get just very clear. So I buy Paul's NFT right now. Right. And then it comes with the physical painting. Let's just say,
well, some pieces do, some pieces don't. I think, you know, each piece I put out is different in a different way, depending if it's a very small edition, some, you know, I'm going to be releasing work that come with physical pieces. And I'm going to be doing stuff that comes with experiential things, you know, front row tickets to a concert, meet and greets, you know, spending time with your favorite athlete or celebrity, that kind of a thing.
Interesting. So let's just say for this one, again, I buy the one that has, that it comes with the physical copy, right? I buy the NFT, I get the physical as well. Correct. So I sell it to the next guy, right? Right. He buys the NFT off me. So like, is it just like, I don't know if this is a dumb question, but is it just as simple as me just sending him the physical as well? Like, what makes that guy like say, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, how, you know, do you get what I'm saying there?
Well, you can sell them separately or together, you know, like one.
Ooh, okay.
One platform that I have a piece on right now, it's a Chanel piece, a bottle, and it comes with the physical piece. And they're an organization that will actually store the physical item in a, you know, cold storage for the buyers. So, mm-hmm. And they're doing a lot of collectibles. So if you bought like a, you know, Michael Jordan signed basketball, you know, NFT, they're the physical item, you could get it to your home, but you could also leave it in their storage facility because you're buying it because you want to flip it. And some people are buying it to keep it, you know?
Interesting. That makes perfect sense. So now, Anthony, so again, what is something in the near future that you and like the Pastel like team are excited about?
Yeah, I mean, look, to be honest, we're just so pumped with some of the recent traction we've had. I mean, like, you talked about 2021 versus now. What I'm so pumped about is during like the crazy bull market and craze and everything, like marketplaces, blockchains, you know, like Paul said, right? He can't even get in touch with someone at customer support. Everyone was focused on how do I get the next $10 million and the next 10 million users, etc. Now everyone's taking a step back and is like, okay, shit, we got to figure out how we're building a marketplace that's going to be around for the next 5, 10, 15 years. Yep. We need the best technology. We need the best robust infrastructure, whatever it might be. And right now we're just getting more inbound traffic than we ever have before, just from marketplaces, from blockchain. We just announced a couple of massive partnerships with Polkadot and Avalanche that I mentioned. And it's just a lot of those use cases and that kind of go-to-market strategy that is starting to really pick up steam now. So I'm just pumped to really continue to do what we've been doing and now just get it in the hands of millions of users as soon as possible.
That's awesome. So, Paul, if anyone wanted to come and check out your artwork, your NFTs, like where could they find you at?
Well, I did one thing I learned about the space that I wanted to do for my collectors more than anything was I saw all these artists I know putting out editions of 200, 500, 1,000, 5,000 editions of pieces, you know, even if they weren't that high price, but they were doing what I consider like a money grab, you know, like a large edition, just like physical art. Some people, they do these big editions. And what the buyers don't understand is that when an artist does an edition of 1,000 or 500, when they do go to sell the art years later, they find that suddenly it's not even, not only is it not worth what they paid for it, but it's actually worth less. It might be worth more, but the fact is there's so many out there and a lot of other people listed them for sale and now they can't even get their money back. And I've specifically learned that from, you know, some older people in the art business to do very small editions of 40, 30, 20, 10. And I've only released two editions of 10 each and four one of ones, maybe five one of ones in total. So I've released 25 NFTs that there's only five left, six or seven of them left. And I've done over 500,000 in sales, about 625 grand in NFT sales. And I wanted to do it justice to my collectors. I didn't want to sell a bunch of them for a little bit of money. And then they all are upset that they can't flip them and make money or resell them. So I've been going into the market very slow and very cautiously and very, very geared towards the collectors who are buying them more than how much I make. I want to build a long career in the space.
That makes perfect sense. So Anthony, like where, if someone wants to learn more about Pastel, like where can they find you at?
Yeah, I would tell them to definitely go to our website, pastel.network, join us on Twitter, join our Telegram. Obviously, just be a part of the community where we're constantly posting releases, constantly posting updates. And we're definitely a very active, intimate community in that respect. So definitely check out our website, go to our docs, and become part of the community.
Yeah, I only have two pieces left on Super Rare. One, they're each a one of a kind, and a few pieces on OpenSea from a small edition. As far as the FISA I have available for sale right now.
Awesome. Alrighty, and I'll have all those links in the description. Well, Paul and Anthony, I really appreciate you all for joining me today. This was an awesome episode. Again, it was just super awesome. It was awesome just to talk to y'all. Like, again, y'all are super cool guys, and it's just y'all have like a lot of experience. So it was just, I appreciate y'all for coming on.
Oh, we appreciate you equally. Thanks for interviewing us and taking your time out of your day.
Awesome. Alrighty, y'all have a good one.
Oh, you too. Have a great day. Thanks again, brother.
All right. Thanks. Alrighty, and that is the end of today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed this one. Again, if you want to reach out to me on Instagram, it's going to be Future of NFT. If you want to reach me on Twitter, it's going to be THEEJARROD. And if you want to leave a voice message, the link is in the show notes below. Alternatively, my email is down there. So again, shoot me an email, say what's up, let me know what you're working on. Again, give me some feedback. Just let me know what you want to hear next on the podcast. Again, what questions do you have? What is your sentiment right now of the whole NFT market? I love hearing other people's thoughts about what's going on right now. All of it. Again, all feedback is good feedback to me. And again, please, if you enjoy this podcast, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I would really appreciate it. That is the end of today's episode. I really hope you're enjoying your week, and I will see you on the next one. Peace.